morning, Green Bay Packers fans. Welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Carvu. Joined this morning by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden. We're talking some Packers football, and we are kicking off a series today. Kind of a synergy with the other Packers blog, allgreenbaypackers.com. We're having a series inviting their writers to join us on the show, and to kick that off for the first part of our series here, we have Chad Toporski joining us. Chad, how you doing this morning?
Oh, doing well, thanks. How about yourself?
Very good. Chad, I was suggested to talk to you first because you're going on vacation. You've joined us before and you've told us about your day job as a teacher, but give us a little refresher and where are you going on vacation?
Well, I'm currently in Pittsburgh. I am a public school teacher. I teach music at the junior high level. And this summer, I'm actually going on vacation to Europe, to both London and Paris for a couple weeks to kind of get away and have some fun.
Well, sounds very good. But how does a music teacher get involved in the X's and O's of football like you do? That's not a very common combination, I don't think.
No, not usually. I've been interested in football, most of my life. My dad growing up was a huge Green Bay Packers fan. He grew up in Wisconsin, and I was born there, and so it runs through the bloodline. And, I'm just a very analytical person. I like the statistics. I like, the X's and O's, and really getting into the heart of football because it's more fun to me, and I can watch the game, with a little bit more knowledge of what's going on and what's happening and, trying to figure out maybe what is going to happen.
For those who don't know, I'm kind of alluding to a series Chad is writing at allgreenbaypackers.com, breaking down the Packers' defensive formations and schemes, which is fantastic, by the way. It's required reading for anyone looking to learn more about the X's and O's of football. Now, Chad, your logical starting point was looking at the Packers' base 3-4 defense, their Okie defense, which makes sense. You'd start there. Packers are known as a 3-4 team, but they actually don't line up in the 3-4 defense, the 3-4 front, all that often. Is it just the nature of today's game in which the Packers need to run their sub-package defenses more often than not to defend against the pass and multiple wide receivers and just the trend the NFL's going?
Absolutely. I think that's a big part of it. And actually, I think it was Football Outsiders who had a recent article about that trend and how many defensive backs teams are using. And there is a trend among all the teams in the NFL. But on the other side, too, you have to look at the personnel that, Dom Capers has to work with. And Charles Woodson, especially in that, nickel cornerback role, it allows Capers to really get his best players on that field because, when you have guys like Shields and Williams who can handle the outside and you've got Charles Woodson with that jack-of-all-trades on the inside, it really allows him to be flexible and to do different things, and to be more unpredictable.
Well, you brought it up here now. Charles Woodson, you talked about in your series about the Packers' nickel defense, about how good Charles Woodson has been and kind of a key piece of the Packers' defense and kind of a chess piece. They can move him around and fill sort of different roles on the team. Now Charles Woodson's gone. Do you think Casey Hayward can be the same type of player or be used in similar different ways?
I think so, and I think we saw flashes of that last year. He's definitely able to lock down that slot receiver and those inside patterns. And we saw him on a couple of blitzes, and I think if he really works on getting stronger, against the running game and getting better at the blitzes that, Charles Woodson used to handle, I think that Hayward could definitely take over for Woodson in that respect, and I think the Packers defense and Capers would be excited if that could happen because it would still allow them to, have that versatility and have that kind of a player on the field.
We wait and see. Chad, yesterday you took a look at the Packers' Eagle defensive formation, which kind of incorporates a gap-shooting defensive lineman. And I think that brings up a good opportunity to discuss BJ Raji as a one-gap or a two-gap player. Now, you actually think he's a better one-gap or a gap shooter. Tell me why.
Just kind of watching over the years, and it's really hard to really pinpoint Raji as one or the other, primarily because I don't think to this point we've seen enough consistency from him. You know, sometimes he does get swallowed up by his blockers and kind of manhandled, but other times he is a disruptive force. Maybe it's just the fact that he's playing next to Pickett, who is such a great two-gapper, that he kind of looks, you know, a little diminished in comparison. I know some of us have been a little bit frustrated with him, but, you know, yeah, I really don't know what to say anymore about Raji. You know, it's just a kind of a feeling and you know, based on what I've seen.
We're talking to Chad Toporsky of allgreenbaypackers.com this morning here on Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. But Chad, what one interesting question I might pose with the addition of Dayton Jones this season in the NFL draft, do you think we're going to see maybe less of Raji playing that one gap and Jones kind of maybe taking over that role?
We might. The interesting thing is looking at all of their players, especially guys like Worthy, who's probably not going to be playing right out of the gate, maybe not at all this year, but Worthy and Mike Neal and Dayton Jones and BJ Raji and how they all fit together is really going to be interesting to see, you know, how Capers plays it. Now, they still have Pickett, who has been going quite strong in his older age, and they still have C.J. Wilson if he stays on board, who Wilson is a pretty good two-gapper in his own right. Not maybe the big force that, you know, everybody would like, but still pretty solid. So, but the other thing, too, is since they do play a lot of nickel, that two-gapping isn't quite as important.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to rush the passer is a little bit more important. I think that's what they're really looking for, and, you know, being able to rotate those guys in to kind of help.
Are you there, Chad?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought I lost you for a second. I don't know how to pose this question here. You know, Ryan Pickett is in the twilight of his career. And as you said, he's going strong. He's been going strong. But, you know, it's the last year of his contract. And, you know, his career is going to be over sooner rather than later. Do you think BJ Raji is just simply going to take over that role from Ryan Pickett as kind of your designated two-gapper, the guy who's, you know, there's not many 340-plus pounders on the team, but BJ Raji's one of them. Do you think he's going to kind of take that role over eventually?
I think we all hope he does. Obviously he, as well as, I believe, in the last year of his contract, too, and they're probably looking at, you know, getting him extended, but they want to see, you know, what they have with him. I think he could, and I think that's what they're hoping for. But I think they're also, you know, trying to look at other possibilities as well and other guys who maybe can come in and try to fill that role, because, you know, that nose tackle position is vital, you know, to the 3-4 defense, even in their nickel packages, because you still need to have that guy who can eat up the blocks and two gap and take care of, you know, the running aspect of the game.
Give us a preview, Chad, of what's next. Is the dime formation the next logical part in the series, seeing as you did the nickel today?
Well, actually, the next one will be the psycho defense, which we haven't seen quite a lot of in the past year or two. Capers mainly used it back in 2010 and a little bit in 2009. But then, yes, we move on to the dime package and its sub-package, the bat defense, which is a 1-4-6 package, which is really quite interesting because this year, you know, scanning through and looking through the NFL Rewind games, And, you know, looking for different examples of the Packers' defensive formations in use, I noticed that Capers really use the bat defense pretty substantially this year as far as a dime defense goes. And I'm interested to see if he'll continue that trend because it is sort of like a psycho package for the dime formation with six defensive backs because you take out that lineman and you add a linebacker in his place, and it allows them to be a little bit more flexible and unpredictable. And then we'll kind of, you know, we'll look at the prevent defenses and then scale things all the way back to the heavy hippo defense, which has four down linemen, four linebackers, and just three defensive backs.
You know, I wanted to pick your brain for one last question here before I let you go, Chad. And you know, this past season, I thought the Packers did a good job with their defense in incorporating more dime, more bat, in that it for the first time, I think, in years, they really scaled back the duties of A.J. Hawk and getting him off the field on passing downs, where I thought he was kind of always a liability of sorts, at least comparative to, you know, somebody who's better in coverage, like a defensive back. Would you agree? Would you say that's the case?
Oh, absolutely. You know, a lot of teams these days have those running backs and like to favor those running backs who can, you know, be dynamic pass catchers and go out in the flats and do all sorts of other things. And you know, Don Capers this year and Mike McCarthy have talked about, you know, making the defense faster and getting more speed on the field. And you know, that's exactly the reason why. If you have, you know, an inside linebacker who just is slow compared to these fast, elusive running backs, then you're not going to have a good matchup and defenses are going to be able to exploit you. So, you know, kind of switching them out for a defensive back, you know, somebody who can chase them down, who can cover them a little bit better, that's definitely to the defense's advantage.
Yeah, I that's what I've thought as well. But Chad, thanks so much for joining us here this morning on Railbird Central. This series is very interesting. I'm having a great time reading it. I can't wait to see its conclusion. But thanks for doing it, and best of luck with your vacation coming up in Europe. Sounds like a blast. Take care.
Thanks so much. It was my pleasure to be on. I appreciate it.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Chad. Chad Toporski of allgreenbaypackers.com joining us here this morning at Cheesehead TV on Railbird Central. Thanks to him for joining us, and thanks to you, the listener, for tuning in here on live stream on CheeseheadTV.com, whatever your method of listening, whether you're listening to the podcasted version later or on demand posted to our website. We got so many ways for you to listen to this show. It's unbelievable. But it's a Wednesday morning here in late June. The Packers offseason program is over. We're kind of in the slow period here of the year. But the NFL's rookie symposium begins today for the NFC rookies in the NFL. The AFC players have actually already had their symposium, or actually it wraps up today. But the Green Bay Packers rookies, pardon me, Green Bay Packers rookies will be, they're en route to Aurora, Ohio, which is where it's being held. It's kind of held, you know, Aurora, Ohio. You might ask, what the heck is there? Why is it Aurora, Ohio? Well, it's very near two other places that are key parts of the NFL's Rookie Symposium. These players will go to the Cleveland Browns training headquarters, where they kind of do this NFL Play 60 event with kids, getting them active, kind of doing a little youth football camp type of thing, or at least, you know, doing like some football drills and plays and having fun, whatever. So that's taking place in Cleveland. And then they also go to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. Kind of a little bit of a history lesson of sorts for the NFL rookies. The Packers arriving today in Aurora, Ohio, and then in the coming days they'll be going and doing those things. It's a 4-day event, the NFL's Rookie Symposium, lasts Wednesday today and wraps up Saturday at some point. The Hall of Fame tour is the last day of the Rookie Symposium, so on Saturday the Packers rookies will be there. So that's kind of what's going on in the world of the Green Bay Packers. You know, the biggest item of news is since our last episode of Railbird Central, former Green Bay Packers linebacker Desmond Bishop has now signed with the Minnesota Vikings. We haven't had a chance to discuss that yet. But, Desmond Bishop becoming just the latest Green Bay Packer to join the Minnesota Vikings. And it never ceases to amaze how often that pipeline runs from east to west, but really not west to east. It is not all that often that the Packers sign a player from the Vikings. Certainly it has happened. I think Gilbert Brown is one example, but there's not many others off the top of my head. I think I heard somewhere Robert Francois was a Minnesota Vikings signing at one time. I'm not sure if he ever played a game with them, though. Maybe he was just a training camp kind of guy. But, is it just amazing? I mean, just recent history of former Packers going to the Vikings. You got, you know, years ago, you got Darren Sharper, a Pro Bowl safety. Ryan Longwell, one of the, Packers all-time leading scorers. You've got Brett Favre, of course. Nobody's ever going to forget that. You just this year have Greg Jennings and now Bishop joining Jennings in Minnesota, something that's only going to make this rivalry even better. It'll be really interesting this year. I mean, the rivalry didn't really need to be spiced up any more than it was already. It was already a bitter rivalry, and Brett Favre really pushed it to another level. But to see both Jennings and potentially Bishop on that team this year, it'll be interesting to see those two matchups, both home and on the road, and see how the Vikings and the Packers fare this season. Both playoff teams last year, albeit both those teams exited the playoffs a little earlier than they may have wanted, but still, regardless, they are two of the better teams in the NFC, and it's only, you know, that this rivalry only being ratcheted up a notch this season. So Desmond Bishop going to the Minnesota Vikings, he stays in the NFC North, and I think that was kind of maybe a contributing factor of why he chose the Minnesota Vikings over, you know, his other suitors, reportedly the Kansas City Chiefs and the New York Giants. Apparently the Jacksonville Jaguars also showed interest, as did the San Francisco 49ers. It doesn't sound like those teams were quite maybe as interested as the Vikings, Chiefs, Giants. But Bishop choosing to stay within the NFC North, staying with a little bit of familiar surroundings where he's going to see the Packers, the Bears, the Lions twice a year. And an interview on the NFL Network on Tuesday, I believe, yesterday morning, Bishop had basically said it'll be motivation to play against Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, he says he doesn't hold anything against the Packers, but he's excited to face a good quarterback like Aaron Rodgers and face the best players in the game. He said he would always get, you know, hyped up for the Vikings game because he used to be able to face Adrian Peterson. And now it's kind of the tables turned a little bit. He's going to be hyped up for the Packers game and the opportunity to face Aaron Rodgers. So That is what it is. That's the word from Desmond Bishop, and that's the latest news on the front there with Bishop joining the team across the border over in Minnesota. How he's going to fit into their defense kind of remains to be seen. You know, he was a inside linebacker in the Packers 3-4 scheme. The Vikings run a 4-3 defense, so it's kind of been speculated, is he going to play middle linebacker, or is he going to play, you know, where he would assume to be more comfortable, kind of in his comfort zone? Or is he going to play either the weak side or the strong side, one of those outside linebacker positions? And you know, from reports I've read, kind of everything's in play right now. They're not really pigeonholing him into any one spot, because the Vikings are kind of transitioning that Henderson from outside linebacker to inside linebacker, so he's being tried out there. Now Desmond Bishop being brought into the fray, and we'll see how things fall into place. I'm sure they'll be spending a lot of their training camp seeing where Bishop fits, seeing where he's most comfortable, seeing where Henderson fits in. And once they start seeing all these things, then they'll probably start making a determination and getting ready for the regular season. But they have some time to do so. But it's official. There's no chance anymore that Desmond Bishop is going to re-sign with the Packers, because he's now under contract with the Vikings. And I mean, you can kind of look at the contract details of this deal as well, and the reported details, as I saw from Tom Pelissero, the former Packers beat writer. Actually, a little interesting story there. Actually, also formerly of 1500 AM ESPN.com, whatever, in Minnesota, and now actually joining the staff of the USA Today. But anyway, Tom Pelissero reporting Bishop's contract reportedly worth about $1.5 million for a one-year deal. That's all he got. Bishop acknowledged that's all he was really being offered. I think, you know, other teams are a little bit scared by his injury as well. They don't want to get locked into multi-year deals. But getting a $1.5 million deal from the Vikings with incentives that could push it up to around $2 million or so dollars. And if you just take a look at a comparison's sake, by cutting Desmond Bishop, the Packers were willing to take a cap hit of approximately $1.8 million in dead money. He had 2 years left on his deal, both this season and then in 2014. So it's kind of spread out over those 2 years. But, you know, just it goes to show you a little bit how scared the Packers were of Desmond Bishop returning from injury and returning to full form. Because, he is, they were willing to pay more to release him than the Vikings were willing to sign him. Packers spending $1.8 million in dead money, it's going to count against the Packers salary cap to release him, whereas the Vikings spending 1.5, potentially up to 2 million. I don't know what those incentives are, but there you go. You know, the money the Packers spent, or the money the Packers gained in releasing Bishop, you know, they spent $1.8 million to release him, but they are also going to gain money on the salary cap as well. You know, he was going to be paid, you know, in excess of $3 million a season, so they'll be gaining some of that room. That the non-guaranteed portion of his salary, money that will go immediately to Datone Jones, the first round draft pick of the Green Bay Packers, the only player who has yet to be signed on the roster, on their 90-man roster. You have to assume that's going to happen somewhat soon. Maybe it won't happen, you know, now that the players are off. You know, he might not sign that contract until shortly before the start of training camp, but I don't think that will be an issue. It's just that there's not holdouts in the NFL anymore like there used to be for rookies. I mean, it's possible it can happen where they don't really agree on the same terms to the same things, but you know, it's not a big deal as long as Datone Jones gets that contract signed by the start of training camp, and there's no reason to think he won't. We're still over a month away, getting to almost exactly a month away. But anyway, I don't think that's going to be an issue. But some of that money, you know, that was saved in releasing Bishop will be going to sign Jones. But more importantly, what do the Packers do with that money beyond just Jones? Who are they going to sign next? Who are the contract extensions going to be going to? There's, you know, some speculation whether they'll sign a player to an extension before the season starts, or will they wait until next year? Because now with the NFL's new CBA, you can carry leftover salary cap space into the next season. So it really doesn't matter whether the Packers sign, you know, a player to an extension now or later. They still get to use the money they've saved either way. I mean, it would matter in terms of a player, you know, that extension going towards this year or tacking on years later, or, you know, starting next year. But other than that, the money will be used one way or another. It's now a matter of who gets it and when. Is it going to be B.J. Raji? Is it going to be Sam Shields? Is it going to be, you know, who are the other free agents coming up with contracts? James Jones, Ryan Pickett, Jermichael Finley, John Kuhn. Well, I can tell you who it's probably not going to be is John Kuhn and Ryan Pickett. I mean, those guys, well, I mean, you never know. At least I don't see those guys getting big contracts anytime soon. You know, they might be re-signed for 1 year or whatever. But as far as them getting, you know, big time contract extension, multi-year deals, that's probably unrealistic. You're more likely to see Morgan Burnett get an extension, or Raji or Shields. I think those are kind of the three top targets there, with James Jones and Jermichael Finley being perhaps a little less likely, but still not out of the question as far as being the next guy who gets his extension. So yeah, I mean, we're talking Raji, Burnett, Shields, Jones, and Finley, kind of the top targets there. Those five guys is potentially getting extensions. Throw Evan Dietrich Smith onto that list as well. Those six guys, for most of them, you know, maybe one of those guys gets an extension before the start of the season. But for all of them, the Packers are going to kind of play a wait-and-see game. They're going to wait and find out how well did these guys do, how well are they going to do this season before they commit. They want to see who really deserves it, who's going to be the best player. So we will find out. But anyway, it's past 9 o'clock here on a Wednesday morning on Railbird Central. Thanks for joining us this morning, folks. We'll be back again on Friday, as we do every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, here at CheeseheadTV.com, 8:30 a.m. Central Time. We'll be continuing our series with the AllGreenBayPackers.com writers. Going to have one of them on the show every day for the next few weeks or so, as we continue our run-up to training camp here in late July. But good good time to get a little synergy going between our Packers blogs, one of the best blogs on the internet, Packers blogs on the internet over there at allgreenbaypackers.com. So we'll be continuing that series, so look forward to that. We'll see you later, everybody, folks. On behalf of Jamie George, I'm Brian Caravu. I leave you today with a song called Sometimes a River by String Cheese Incident on Cy Fidelity Records. We'll see you later, everyone. Go Pack. Go.